Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Many like to focus on Milwaukee's problems. The city's poverty, segregation, and crime are often in the news. But for years, many have been working behind the scenes to lift up the city and its neighborhoods, alleviating poverty, spurring economic development, and fighting for food justice. This hour, we'll talk to three of Milwaukee's movers and shakers, Diane De La Santos, Daryl Johnson, and Gretchen Mead. The three were honored earlier this month at the Milwaukee Awards for Neighborhood Development Innovation, which celebrated the good news of successful efforts to revitalize neighborhoods. They've been working for years to make that happen, training community members to garden and grow their own food, hosting economic development programs that bring new businesses and help people secure jobs, and hosting youth and family programs as a community pillar. They join us to discuss what things are happening to improve the city, what still needs to be done, and ways that others can get involved. First, the news. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls this hour as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Joining us in our studios, Gretchen Mead. Gretchen, as we said, with the Victory Garden Initiative, builds communities that grow their own food, creating a community-based, socially just, environmentally sustainable, and nutritious food system. Gretchen, congratulations on winning the award, and what a great thing you're doing. This is a wonderful, wonderful little thing.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. And Victory Gardens, tell us, for people who don't know about the history, they were around all over the country in World War I and World War II, weren't they?
Right. The height of the Victory Garden movement was in World War II, and it really was to support the war effort. People came together to grow their own food in order to ensure soldiers had what they needed to fight in World War II. I think the most interesting thing for me as a community organizer and somebody who's really trying to create social change is that time is often referred to as the time of the most unity in our country. So people really kind of knew what they wanted to do, what their goal was, and they knew they're growing their own food and being very self-sufficient and doing it themselves was going to help that.
Mm. And it is amazing where you put these gardens. I saw a little video. You're all over. You're on rooftops. You're on little sidewalk spaces. You're everywhere.
Yeah, we really try to get our slogan is, this is a grassroots movement, move grass, grow food. Kind of catchy.
I like that. Yeah.
Anywhere there's grass, why not put a garden? As long as there's a little sun there, too.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about how extensive it is. Let's meet Diane De La Santos, and she is with City on a Hill. And this organization is working to transform the lives of youth and families in Milwaukee's central city, and also to overcome really poverty and injustice. And they go where the problems are and they figure out ways to solve the problems. And Diane, it's been said that you really changed your life when you became executive director of City on a Hill. Can you tell us about that change of life?
Sure. I had been with Aurora Healthcare for about 20 years and was a vice president with the organization, doing well. But at the same time, I was reading the headlines in Milwaukee and watching the news in Milwaukee and seeing the devastating problems there, and felt that I was at a point in my life where I could let go of the success I'd had and move into a place where perhaps my life would have more significance. And so I was involved in the founding of City on a Hill and then became its executive director, first as a lone executive and then just full-time as the executive director there. And after a couple of years of being there and trying to help resolve problems in that difficult neighborhood, I just began to realize that you can't solve a problem you don't understand, and you can't understand from a distance. And even though I was working there 8 to 5 or 8 to 6 or 8 to 10, I wasn't living there. And so that was about 05 or 06, and so I decided to put my condo up for sale in the suburbs and moved into what was then an abandoned hospital that we were rehabilitating and repurposing. And so that's where we are. Mm. That's how I got where I am today.
Good for you. I think it does make a difference to live in the community where you're working. That's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And when you take on the mission of alleviating poverty, that's a pretty big mission, isn't it? How do you do that?
It is. We're doing three things. We're trying to alleviate the symptoms that we see in our neighborhood, and those symptoms may be homelessness, hunger, health disparities. But we realize we can keep doing that for a long time, and nothing's changes substantially. And so the second thing that we do is we work hard to break the cycle of generational poverty. And we do that by working with young people and helping them to set goals for their lives, helping them to learn the skills that they will need, helping them to find a path to success through education, through job preparation, through just a whole lot of things that we do with young people to help them first reduce the risks in their lives and then find a new way to live. And then the third thing we do is we believe that if you prepare young people for success in a community, but you haven't prepared the community to embrace them and to support their success, that they still may struggle. And Milwaukee is a community that is racially segregated.
Yes.
There is concentrated poverty and so forth. So we also work with the wider community on issues around injustice and racial issues and persistent poverty to try to help them be engaged in the solutions as well.
Yeah, wonderful. Daryl Johnson is also joining us, and Daryl leads the Riverworks Development Corporation, which serves as a catalyst for redevelopment, and they target residential neighborhoods of Harambee and River West, for those of you who are in the Milwaukee area. Under his leadership, it's become a major force for community and economic development on Milwaukee's north side. They've done a lot of commercial and residential real estate development, economic development programs that bring new businesses and help people prepare for and secure jobs. And they have a program, which I want to start with you on this, Daryl, because I know that the programs that used to serve young people who are aging out of the foster care system, that we've lost a lot of those. And I know that you have worked on an ambassador program as part of all that you do that helps young people get jobs and get skills who have aged out of foster care. First of all, hello.
Well,
thanks
hello.
For being here.
Glad to be here. This is a program that we started about 2 years ago, and the whole idea is to deal with a population of kids or young adults that people have basically forgotten about. Because once they age out of foster care, there's no more support that they get from the federal government. So our piece was to help them bridge that gap and get employment and the soft skills that they need to be successful in the workforce. We also contract with a number of business improvement districts, and so they get an opportunity to be in those districts and get opportunity to meet with some of those business people and learn an acumen of really what it takes to be a successful mm-hmm. business. So our whole goal is to provide them with all the soft skills, the financial literacy, to improve their lives.
Mm-hmm. We've heard again and again that what we need, that so many jobs that were good-paying jobs left Milwaukee some years ago, and we're having a heck of a time trying to get businesses to relocate, particularly in the part of the city in which you're working. I'd like everybody to address this on the panel. Let's start with you, Daryl. How do you get people to come to Harambee, to come to River West, other parts of the city, and create jobs for people?
It's a challenge. It's a huge challenge, and what we're finding is that we need them to provide them with the opportunity to basically sell our neighborhoods, and that there's a workforce there that is very dependable and willing to work and to prove their community. So one of the first things we do is really market our area as a destination for businesses, for people to come to. And from that standpoint, we just need to get the people skilled and trained in certain area so there's a pool of people that can work in the community.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of skills are needed?
It varies because we have a lot of old manufacturing companies, die-cast companies. We have companies that still produce for the auto industry in mm-hmm. some fashion. Because American Mortar was one of the largest employers within the Riverworks Center area. They employed at one point in time 6,000 employees. Mm-hmm. So when they left back in the 80s, that skill level was still there. But what we are attempting to do is work with a younger population and give them the soft skills that they need. Because a lot of businesses that share with us, we just need a good body that's willing to show up and work hard.
Right. And like for all of you, because you all work on issues in the Central City, and let's talk to you, Gretchen, about this. What is it? What do we need in addition to gardens, in addition to poverty agencies and jobs? What do we need to really revitalize this part of the city that just struggles?
Well, one of the things I've learned is just being present is very important. It kind of speaks to why Diane moved to the Central City. Harambee is very uniquely placed, and the farm that we run there is uniquely placed in that it's on a border. It's right next to River West. It's a place where it doesn't feel like, you know, too far out of someone's comfort zone to go. And I really think the farm is an activity that can normalize diversity and people who are normally segregated in their everyday day-to-day activities can come together and just spend time together. And I really think that time is key.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you're teaching a whole generation of young people who are learning. All of us need to learn some of these skills. I mean, gardening is a wonderful thing. To eat the food that you grow and to eat good food, that's important to show up on time and be excited about a job and to be able to sleep at night. It's part of who we are.
Yeah, I put it under the category of self-efficacy.
Right.
Oftentimes, whether or not it's become someone's career to me is often irrelevant. It's more that sense that someone can accomplish something, and even if it's as small as growing their first tomato, it's so powerful to be able to do that with your hands just through your own day-to-day activities to make something that sustains you. It, I think, creates momentum in a person's life in a direction of understanding their own self-worth and power.
Absolutely. And young people, I saw a video, too, of your organization, eat the foods that they grow, don't they?
They do. They definitely do.
It's exciting for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. How do you respond to this, Diane? How do we revitalize that whole part of the city? What all is needed?
I would say a couple of things. First of all, for people outside the central city, looking at this problem is difficult because to them it's nameless, it's faceless, it's a huge problem. They don't know where to plug in. So one of the things that we do is just engage a lot of people on site in volunteer work at our organization. In a given year, we use 1,400 volunteers.
And so, really?
Yes.
Wow.
And so people are coming from suburban areas, from rural areas, from outside the city to work. They're interacting with people. They're finding that people everywhere are pretty much the same, right? They want the same things for their lives and for their families. And they make a connection with the need. And then it's much more personal for them, and it's much more tangible and important to them to do something about it. And so we see then some connections that are made that help to open up opportunities for employment wherever these volunteers may be coming from. The second thing that we're doing is we're working with a small planning grant from the Bader Philanthropies group to develop a workforce development program for young people. We employ high school kids in the summertime, and we want to build upon that not only for high school kids and students in college, but also young adults. And so we're beginning by talking with them about all the barriers to employment, because there are all these jobs available and there are all these people looking for jobs, and yet there's a gap. And so identifying those barriers, logistical barriers, do I have an ID, do I have right. transportation, you know, logistical things, barriers in the workplace where there may be bias or other issues in the workplace, just identifying all those barriers to getting a job and to keeping a job, and helping, as Daryl said, with soft skills so that people are better able to navigate that divide.
Yeah, tell us more about those skills. Add to that, Daryl. What kinds of skills? What do you really need to know so people will, you'll walk in the door and they'll say, you're the one?
Yeah, through our Financial Opportunity Center, we spend a lot of time focusing on financial piece, but the other piece is this showing up to work. How to communicate with your supervisor when there are issues and you don't understand them, how you deal with it. Rather than just getting upset and walking out the door, you have to have that patience and understanding within the workplace. So we provide those one-on-one skilled opportunity for people to speak with professional people on how to deal with these things within the workplace. 'Cause through our program, hate to say no, we don't penalize people, but we want people to be on time. 'Cause a lot of times within these manufacturing businesses, you're late three times and you're out. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that they have to be prompt. And then when there's an issue, they have to be able to communicate with their boss. 'Cause individuals have, you know, things happen. Daycare may not have messed up in some areas.
Right.
So you have to be able to think ahead. Who is your backup in a lot of cases to handle these situations? And a lot of people don't have backups. And that's where we can kind of find some support for them through our network.
Mm-hmm. How important, it's interesting, your story, Diane, that you decided to live in the city, that you sold your condo in Waukesha. You've all mentioned that we have this part of the city that tends to be poor, where there aren't very many jobs, where a lot of people haven't moved very far outside, where transportation is very difficult, where there aren't very many jobs. And yet, I think you were saying this, Diane, that the outside community just doesn't know that. You know, that there's this real sense of, well, this is a hard part of Milwaukee, and by golly, I'm not even going to drive through it, some people say, because I'm too afraid of what's going on. And yet we're all intertwined in many ways. How do we become so separate? And can we solve the problems of what's going on in the central city with our separateness, even though we are so separate? Gretchen?
Well, one thing that occurs to me on a really daily basis, I would say, is how the concentration of wealth and power has whittled away at our communities over time, increasingly. And I think that as that concentration of wealth and power increases, it sort of sets us against each other. All of us who are sort of the little people of the world, looking at the other little person of the world, thinking that somehow it's their fault that they're in the position that they are. And I, you know, if there was something that I could say to the politicians at this moment in time, is how can we work on that from a big picture perspective? How can we really think about how to dispense power and wealth in this community and around the state, really? I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to solve the issue. It's really such a big picture issue.
Diane.
I guess I would say that there's such a clear history of disenfranchisement, of disparity, of everything from, you know, the terrible history of our country in terms of race relations down through white flight and into today, you know. So it is, Daryl spoke about the loss of the manufacturing jobs. I mean, it is no surprise that we are where we are, because the history has just brought us exactly here. And I think it's going to require some commitment and some sacrifice on the part of many people to come alongside those who are working so hard to overcome the poverty but can't get there on their own.
Mm-hmm.
We work with young people, and so we see just the culture of poverty and how hard it is for them to overcome. And sometimes a young person will get a job, and then a family member will have a need, or a young person will go to college and a family member will have a need, and the young person will quit a job or quit college because the priority of relationships is so very high when relationships is all you have when you're in poverty. And so they're often not making bad decisions. They're choosing between two goods. Take care of my family, keep a job, take care of my family, stay in school. And so they're not easy decisions, and they need support from an understanding community around them, mm-hmm. rather than people who make judgments about their bad decisions and don't come alongside to provide the support that they need.
Interesting answer. You grew up, I understand, in Huronby. Tell me, Daryl, how things may have changed since the time you grew up in the neighborhood in which you now work. What great stories you see happening, what good changes, what the troubles are.
Yeah, family moved to the neighborhood in probably about 1960, so I was a very young kid. But it was a very diverse neighborhood. I went to school. I went to a Catholic school, which was only a few blocks away from the house. Went to church, which was only a few blocks away from the house. And most of the family members had opportunity to work right there within the neighborhood. Mm. And I always think about King Drive. When you think about Keefe Avenue to Locust Street, there was a lot of commerce there. You had your drug stores, you had your banks, you had your clothing store. So everything was there. And started to see things change around 1968 when there was the riots. And Milwaukee experienced it, maybe not on the level of Detroit and other cities, but what it caused is fear within the neighborhood. So at that point in time, started seeing, you know, white flight out of the neighborhood.
Right.
We started seeing investment leave the neighborhood. So when you started thinking about your corner stores, they started popping up, but your major grocery stores, which sold fruit and vegetables, all those healthy stuff, mm-hmm. were no longer in the neighborhood. The banks started leaving. Then you started seeing generations of people moving into the neighborhood who didn't own properties. They were mainly there renting, and they didn't upkeep the property. So it was this major change within the neighborhood. But today, there's so many opportunities. There's still a lot of assets within the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And as our organization focuses on the Harambe area, we try to focus on those assets. We try to bring investment back into the community. But we also are having a dialogue and a serious discussion on how can we bring equity back into this neighborhood. What does the parity look like between River West and Harambe? How we start that dialogue, having people work together on broader issues. How do we create jobs? How do we get investors and entrepreneurs thinking about investing back in Harambe area? Mm-hmm.
And when you mentioned food, stores leading, I would imagine the Victory Gardens in the city are a direct response to that fact, too, that it's really hard in many parts of the city to be able to get good food.
It sure is. We really have been working on having greater access in the community in many different ways with many different kinds of programs. So we have partnership with local food pantry, the River West Food Pantry, that does direct giving to people. But we primarily work on helping people grow their own food. So it's a long-lasting and sustainable way and source of having access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So we have a children's farm stand program, which is really wonderful summer long. Mm. Kids are growing their own food. They're really learning about vegetables and where they come from. And we've increased our production area to probably about an acre now this year. So people can now use their SNAP benefit, their food stamp card, to grow vegetables right in the community, which is really a nice benefit for the neighbors that live right there.
Absolutely. We're going to welcome phone calls for our three award winners this hour of the program, and here's how you reach the conversation, 800-486-8655. The Milwaukee Awards for Neighborhood Development Innovation, the MANDIs, were given out recently, and three of the winners for the Northern Trust Navigator Award are with us. The first place winner was Daryl Johnson. You've met Daryl, and we're speaking with Daryl and two women who are doing wonderful projects who are also honored as finalists for the work they're doing. That award honors an individual demonstrating leadership and collaboration for change, and it's the whole awards is part of an honoring of efforts to revitalize neighborhoods and strengthen the community. The finalists are selected from public nominations. Daryl Johnson is with us, who leads the Riverworks Development Corporation. He's grew up in Harambe and works there and also in River West. Gretchen Mead, who's the director of the Victory Garden Initiatives. They are building communities, and there are so many of them that grow their own food, creating a community-based, socially just, environmentally sustainable, and nutritious food system. Diane De Los Santos is the executive director of City on a Hill. In 2003, she changed her life to become executive director of this city, which works on many fronts to alleviate chronic poverty on the near west side of Milwaukee. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We would love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network. We welcome your phone calls now this hour. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, as we meet three of the winners of these Milwaukee Awards for Neighborhood Development Innovation, the MANDI Awards, and we start our calls with Tim in Milwaukee. Hello, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Well, I have a question. I've been learning a lot about the not-for-profit world, and I hear a lot of times when these people are talking about coming together as a community and working together as a neighborhood association trying to work with the people in there. Two of your panelists are actually dealing in the Harambe area. Gretchen's garden is actually in Harambe. And so I was curious as to know if they were actually working together, if they ever had plans to work together, and if they have any input as to how hard it is to deal with other not-for-profit organizations dealing on the same problem in the same area, because it can sometimes be competitive, I think, and that competition, I think, can actually hinder some of the good results that could work
and
if they actually...
How is it competitive, Tim?
Well, it's competitive in a way that, to where if let's just say you have a garden, there's two people working in on trying to feed the hungry.
Uh-huh.
And when you have a small not-for-profit or even a medium-sized not-for-profit and you're in an area like the Milwaukee area and your funding comes from certain sources, you want your agency to make it.
Right.
And so you're kind of in competition for those same people to get money.
I see.
And so what happens is you now look at each other as a competitor rather than an ally working on the same problem. And so I'm wondering how they deal with that.
All right. Gretchen?
Well, the answer is for endless quantities of dollars to come to all nonprofit organizations.
Of course.
that's the solution. I would agree that sometimes it can be a struggle. I think what we found as an organization, and it's actually a really appropriate question because our award really was related to collaboration. Mm-hmm. And we have found a great deal of success collaborating with organizations that need our services related to food and gardening and agriculture, but aren't necessarily working in our exact realm. So there are other groups that do some work that's similar to Victory Garden Initiative. We have a special niche. So it's a little harder to partner with organizations that do nearly a similar thing, but to work with a group really like City on the Hill, for example, that serves a population that may benefit from having a garden, having access to better food, having resources on healthy cooking. We've maybe collaborated with dozens or even hundreds of organizations, and including RiverWorks. We've worked with over time on grant proposals. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you really have to keep going back to the drawing board to find the exact right way to work with other partner organizations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there a limited amount of money, Diane, available to all the groups?
We're all laughing here. Yes. There is always a shortage of funds to do the work that we're called to do. Yes.
Yeah.
But again, collaboration is possible. Sometimes funders require collaboration, and that can be helpful as long as it isn't just so short-lived that it dissipates when the funding is gone. And as long as the funders recognize that it takes time to work on the collaboration as well as the problem that you're collaborating to solve.
Uh-huh.
So I'd say that. The other thing is that I had an opportunity to be part of a Community Building Institute workshop in Knoxville, where an organization that is doing most of their work in Milwaukee is based. And WCS is the Wisconsin intermediary for that work, and they're bringing together groups of people to learn how to form community among themselves in order, therefore, to do a better job of doing community outside their walls.
Mm.
And I've found it to be very powerful. I know some of the other youth-serving organizations in the city have participated, and I could recommend Community Building Institute as a way to perhaps bring more of us as nonprofit leaders together to collaborate.
Mm-hmm. Daryl.
Yeah, I think I always tell people our success has always been based on our partnership and collaboration. We have many different facets with inside our organization, so there's opportunities for people and organizations to fit in. And it's all about, for our focus, it's all about the community. And if we can find ways that we can leverage resources for both of us to come in and do work within the community, that's what we're all about. I mean, Gretchen mentioned something. We have partnership. We have a beer line trail, which is Old Bannon Railway, where we have actually planted fruit trees that we have gotten. So we look at opportunities and how can we build on those opportunities to better the community.
Thanks, Tim, very much for your call. Let's go to Al in Milwaukee. Hi, Al.
Hi, Kathleen. How you doing?
I'm fine, Al. How are you?
Good. I drive the city pretty much every day, and I see a lot of abandoned homes. My idea is to get these abandoned homes, rehab it, and put it back on sale or for sale in Milwaukee for nothing more but the cost of the rehab and the acquisition if that, applies. The people that will qualify to purchase at such a low price will have to be employed, will have to attend community education and whatnot. I'm wondering what your guests will think about this idea.
Daryl, what do you think?
I think that's a great opportunity. I mean, we have had many individuals who have tried that who haven't been successful. And my background came into housing through cooperative housing and really believing that people working together can afford to improve the houses, and they have control over them. May not have direct ownership of the property, but within the organization, the cooperative, they have shared interests and shared goals to make sure that the properties are kept up and that the neighborhood is improved. In the city of Milwaukee, yeah, there's a lot of vacant border properties within Harambe area, but they also cost a lot of money to repair and rehab, because you don't want to put an individual into a house a year from now, they have major issues with the roof or whatever. You want to make sure you can provide them that something has long-term or longevity of any repairs that's done to the property, so they're not stuck with doing those repairs in the future.
Has Habitat been active in Harambe?
Yes, they have, and we're courting them right now to come back into the Harambe area. They have done about 40 homes.
That's quite a few.
Yeah, this was probably about 5 years ago. So we're going through the process right now of courting them to come back into the Harambe area and do an additional 40 to 60 homes.
There are parts of the city that have a lot, I've noticed. There's certain sections of the central city you drive through, and there are a lot of Habitat homes.
Yeah, they've been able to come into a number of neighborhoods and really stabilize it. And what it does, open up the door for other investors, other developers to come in to deal with housing, but also look at the commercial corridors.
Yeah. What about housing? That book, Evicted, won the Pulitzer Prize. It was about Milwaukee. It's getting a lot of attention. And Matthew Desmond really pinpointed the problems with housing, the substantial problems with housing, and how it's hard to get out of poverty because of your housing situation. And it's expensive, and you get evicted sometimes because you've fallen behind because of any number of circumstances, and the cycle goes on and on and on. As somebody who deals with that endless cycle of poverty, Diane, how big an issue is housing, and how are you addressing it?
It's a huge issue, Kathleen, and not only does it affect the family as a unit, but the individual children are impacted educationally as well. It's thought that every time a child moves geographically and therefore moves to a different school, they lose 6 months of progress. And I remember, you know, in the earlier years of our work, when I was driving the van to take kids home after programs, and we'd drive from City on a Hill to another part in the central city, and as we would go, a child would say, "I used to live here. A month ago, I lived there. I lived here last Christmas. I lived here." And so when they're moving so much, even though the children may not literally be on the street, they may be at an aunt's and then a grandma's and then a neighbor's and then a shelter, it's still so damaging to them. And so it's a very big problem. We've also found, because our staff does home visits, you go home, you wonder why the child is struggling, and then you see the home situation, you know, no heat or no plumbing working, and it's no wonder that they're struggling when they have to go to, you know, a fast food restaurant in the morning to wash up before they can go to school.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's just very, very problematic, and we see it through the eyes of children.
Yeah. Gretchen?
Well, I had an idea once that we could take some of these old homes and rehab them and create sort of a homestead act where we could combine the rehab of a home with a farm, essentially, in the central city. And whoever came in to rehab that home and then would have access to the home indefinitely and would also get to farm the land in that community. I thought this would be a good way to solve two birds with one stone. But I also have this sort of fantasy that maybe for 1 year we could all turn off our screens and learn how to rehab homes and then we would engage in these skills again at some point if we could really have a community that knows how to fix homes again. It seems like we could keep up with this, and it could be less of an economic problem and more of a skills problem. But, you know, maybe that's a dreamer's
thing. No, here's Daryl. He's going to talk to you about that, right? Doesn't
yes.
that sound good, Daryl?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's good to have dreamers, isn't it? That's a really good idea.
Yeah. I'm aware of another project that maybe could be a model. The community warehouse on the near south side has a great project that they undertake. They warehouse supplies for construction, for residential construction as well as beyond that. And they also work with a lot of people who are returning to the community from incarceration. and they engage that population in rehabbing the homes, and then that paves a way for home ownership for that individual after they have been a part of the rehab of the home. So in the process, they learn the skills, mm-hmm. to Daryl's point. So if something breaks down, right. 6 months from then, they know how to repair it themselves. And they have sweat equity, as Habitat for Humanity does as yeah. well. So there are examples of ways that we can be creative with it.
Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of skills we should all have. Mm-hmm. Instead, we just have these screens and we're sitting at desks. I'd like to know how to do all of that.
Me too.
Wouldn't you? I mean, it would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Al. Thanks for calling. You prompted a good discussion here. Let's go to Joanne in West Allis. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. I was just calling because I'm a retired RN. I was retired because of disability, knee surgeries that didn't go well.
Oh.
But my brain still works, and I was wondering if there's any use for an old lady RN that, because I called the church in the city over several months. I called 3 times, but I never got a call back. And I don't know if, you know, my license is current. I don't know if they take older people or, I just wanted to volunteer somewhere and, you know.
Did you call City on a Hill? Is that who you called?
Yes, our church was involved with them one oh. Saturday a month.
Oh.
And that's how I heard about it. And I called and left a message in voicemail on 3 different occasions. But I never got a call back.
Well, here's the director, so you made the right call because she's okay. right here. Diane.
Hello. You said you called Church in the City. That would be the church. And then we're City on a Hill. And uh-huh. and so I can tell you this, even if your church is not able to get a group to come back again, you can come on your own as an individual. And yes, we would have a place for you, even if you're not real mobile. We need people to take blood pressures and blood sugars, and so we would definitely have space for you.
And and I've still been doing like prenatal teaching or diabetic teaching. You know, I just can't be on my feet for 8 hours a day, but I'd sure love to get involved.
That would be great. We often are working in diabetes education, so that would be wonderful. Mm. Just give us a call, 931-6670.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. So tell me some stories, because I always wonder, and you're all working in the fields, I always wonder, because I've met, you know, a lot of young people who've lived in Milwaukee, who haven't come from the best of circumstances, who somehow survive. I mean, they not just survive, they really thrive. And I saw a video about your organization as well. Diane, there was a story of, you know, Homeless Rose and what happened to Homeless Rose, and several people who went on to go to college and have really flourishing careers. What is that? How do you work with people to get them to be their best possible selves, to get them, even though their circumstances may be just horrendous, but to get them to excel in school and live what their dreams might be? How do you do that? Is that something that's innate in people, or can you move people? How do you move people to that direction?
Well, I've seen the work that we do. It's very simple and basic. I would say it's part of our humanity to grow food. And the thing that I didn't know when I started doing this, I came from it very much from a eat better food, you know, get outside, do it yourself, this is an environmental issue. I didn't anticipate that people would tell me again and again that it was a spiritual journey for them to start growing their own food, and that it would heal some of their, you know, their deep wounds and traumas to get outside and just spend time in their yard helping something to grow. It really, I think, as I said, is part of our humanity. If we, as a species, were to stop growing food, we would be kind of a different species moving forward. And I think it connects us very deep down into spiritual healing that we didn't know that it would. So that's the most common thread that I hear, stories of people suffering from multiple layers of trauma or deep anxiety disorders, even agoraphobics, who come out little by little to take care of that seed that they planted, and ultimately getting to know their neighbors, talking to them about food, sharing the extra tomatoes for the season, and really just creating a web of community just simply mm-hmm. because they're outside doing it.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. It mm-hmm. is a journey that takes us to a whole different realm. Well, you talk about getting away from the screens and everything, that does it, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
It is mm-hmm. spiritual. Diane, what do you say?
Well, I was thinking of an article I was just reading this morning about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and how they shape the trajectory of our lives. And if we have more and more of those adverse experiences, it makes it so much harder for us to follow a path to success in our lives. And those, it used to be thought that childhood neglect or abuse were the only things that would harm a child moving forward, but the more recent work of the CDC is identifying living in poverty, living with a parent who has mental illness, you know, all kinds of other things that are, no one is trying to harm or neglect the child, and yet they're in an environment where that creates an adverse experience for them, and it's correlated to a PTSD kind of a trauma in the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they've found is that if you just interject caring adults into their circumstance, even if you can't lift them completely out of that circumstance, it will have a positive impact. It will make a difference. It will help them to heal from some of that trauma. And so that's part of what we do, just with a lot of mentoring of young people and helping them to know their value. We're a faith-based organization, and Gretchen talked about the spirituality of working with your hands in the earth, and they're also in our work with young people, there's also a tremendous impact when they begin to understand the unconditional love of a God who cares for them. And that can begin to help them see their value and to make different choices in their lives. And so we have a methodical sort of series of courses and experiences that we guide young people through, mm-hmm. to help them to break that cycle. But some of it just comes down to loving them.
Yeah, doesn't it? A lot comes down to love, that's for mm-hmm. sure. Daryl?
Yeah, I think for us is just exposing the young people to something different. One of the things we attempted to do with the young people is how do they handle anger or things that's not going right. So we got them involved in a yoga class. So they do yoga.
Really?
Yes.
Great.
And so it was a way to relax them and have them think outside of the box, get away from those daily chores or daily problems that they have to deal with, and they put them in a different setting.
Hmm.
And we also have professional people come in and mentor and talk to them to expose them to their lifestyle, their work habits. So for us, it's all about exposure, taking them out of the community into another environment.
Mm-hmm. Yoga.
Yes.
Yoga in
the garden. There we go.
Yoga
in the garden.
You got it. All right.
Yoga in the garden.
We'll take more phone calls in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guests this hour have recently won awards for the great work they're doing in Milwaukee's city, in the central city. The Mandy Awards were distributed, and they won awards for individuals demonstrating leadership and collaboration for change. Daryl Johnson, who leads the Riverworks Development Corporation, which serves the residential neighborhoods of Harambee and River West, and also the Riverworks Business Improvement District. He's done some remarkable things you've heard about during the course of this hour. Gretchen Mead is also joining us. Gretchen leads the Victory Garden Initiative. They're building communities that grow their own food, all kinds of gardens all over the central city, creating a community-based, socially just, environmentally sustainable, nutritious food system. Diane De Los Santos is also here. She's the director of City on a Hill, and they are doing work to transform the lives of youth and families in Milwaukee's central city neighborhoods to overcome poverty and injustice, and doing a variety of programs to meet that mission. More phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network. More callers now. Anne in Monona is next. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I hope this isn't too convoluted a question, but I was having some work done in my house recently, and if you have like a flooded basement, or you've got electrical problems, or your house needs painting or something, you absolutely need people who are competent, who can do that. And it's great to have people who are competent and maybe have been in apprenticeship programs, so that you know they're going to do a great job and do it fairly quickly. And your guests mentioned this before, but I'd like a little more specific an answer maybe. Everybody knows that recent legislation and some of our recent politicians have done everything possible to try to destroy the jobs of a whole bunch of categories of workers. For instance, when Act 10 was being debated, this was in 2011, there were many union members at the Capitol who testified that apprenticeship programs were one of the great things that unions provided, and they would probably be devastated by this kind of politics. Yet we know what has happened in the state. It continues to happen, and it's affecting everybody. It's affecting some people much more than others, but nobody, I don't think anybody who actually works is happy. And so I was wondering how you deal when you're working in a community with people who know what's going on, but maybe they, you know, if you get too militant, you're going to probably have a lot of difficulty getting grant money. And if you don't show that you understand that the that this job loss is largely something that's coming from the top and it's unjust, if you don't show that you understand that too, you probably won't be trusted. So how do you handle, you know, the political climate in a way that makes people feel, well, okay, you know, we're working in a very, very unusual and difficult environment.
Thanks, Anne. I'm going to hold you there. We have a lot of callers coming in. Who wants to start with that one?
I guess I can start on this.
Go ahead, Daryl.
I guess at one point in time in my life, I wanted to become an elected official.
Really?
Because I thought I could make a change.
Yeah, Daryl.
And I think what has happened is a lot of these elected officials have got caught up in answering to who has given to their campaign. And I think they forget about the people on the ground who need the work and the support most often. And if we keep going the way we're going, we're going to lose a generation of people who can have the skill level and who can work in a lot of these different corporations and within the community. So for me, it's sad that we're not looking at what needed, that's really needed in a lot of these communities. Because within the Harambe area, within the city of Milwaukee, 50% of African-American males are unemployed. Mm. So we got some issues that we need to deal with, else the city's going to keep going in the wrong direction. Female-headed households. We got a lot of issues. We need to start investing in people. And I think that's where the money should be invested, rather so much in corporations, and it should be invested in people.
So why don't you run for office?
Well, I felt that I could do more at the community level rather than beholden to people in the campaign or people who are giving money to the campaign. I want to be at the grassroots level working with the residents.
Hmm. What do other people think about that? Should he run for office, Gretchen?
I'm cheering for you. I like to see people be engaged. I think the caller's question really has to do with how do we speak truth to power without alienating ourselves or coming off as an irrational or radical. I think people that are doing work, especially related to poverty issues or the balance, again, of that concentration of wealth and power, we can step across a line that then stigmatizes the work that we're doing in some way. And I do think, as I would imagine you would all agree, that as leaders, we pick our battles. We decide where we think we can make change. And we move forward carefully. And we hope that we have broad-based community support in what we're doing and that it resonates with enough people that we can keep pushing a boundary. But I find it myself to be challenging, frankly.
Diane?
What I'm thinking about is not specifically the issue of jobs, but just the issue of trying to bring people together in a polarized environment. And where we've had some success with that is in offering a training that we call Removing Racial Residue. And we've been offering it, we'd offered it within City on a Hill for many years, but now it's been increasingly requested out in the community, the Nonprofit Center, the Milwaukee Bucks, various companies,
great,
clinics, churches, all kinds of organizations. And what we do is bring together several trainers, instructors of different ethnicities, and they tell their stories as a part of training about this residue that gets inside us, that divides us. And what we've found is that with audiences that are nearly all white or all black or mixed, all different ethnicities, listening to the stories helps break down some of the misconceptions, the prejudices, the barriers, the gunk, the residue that's
right.
in the way of people really hearing each other.
Great.
And
send
being
some
able
of them.
To solve
send
problems.
Them to us. We'll do a show on that at some point.
All right.
Thank you all very much. You're all quite inspirational and. It's good to talk about the good people are doing instead of all the problems all the time. Thank you.
Thanks
to Daryl Johnson from the Riverworks Development Corporation, to Diane De Los Santos from City on a Hill, and Gretchen Mead from the Victory Garden Initiative. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this interesting show, and thanks to Gretchen Brown for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening. Be with you on Monday.